Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your co-host, Alan Cardoza, and with me today is co-host Dr. Matt Polacek. Dr. Polacek is a nationally recognized expert spokesperson on mental health and substance abuse use disorder issues. He utilizes his experience and expertise to lead the Betty Ford Center's outpatient services as its director.
If you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addiction, and so much more.
Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, Matt, I gotta tell you, it is good to be in studio with you. And I don't know about you, I had a great weekend. Tell me how yours was.
I had a wonderful weekend. My weekends are traditionally set on playing with my six-year-old daughter and wife. And lucky today, we have a guest who specializes actually in play and imaginative therapy with kids. And it was interesting. I was on a phone call with my wife, and my daughter is in Massachusetts, where our guest is from right now. And she's with my in-laws. And grandpa also has now been recruited into her imaginary play game. So he plays a guy named Philip, and she's Lacey. And basically, you know, her world is imaginary games where I'm a mermaid and she's a mermaid. So I'm really excited, you know, to discuss with our guest today what is healthy play, you know, how much of a role to parents should they play in it. My daughter is an only child. Does that affect what, you know, the way I interpret it? But the experience over the weekend is always great. I love playing with her. And I was curious, you know, with your boys growing up, was imaginary play part of their kind of repertoire?
Yes, and it was. And, you know, it's one of the things that that I'm so incredibly grateful for. And my boys are grown now. But I had the opportunity to be a room dad from kindergarten to fifth grade. And I got to tell you, it is one of the things that I am most grateful for was to be able to have that time with them. So not only could we do make-believe at home, which I love doing, but I was able to see how the teachers did it, and in kindergarten, how they would set up situations that were make-believe and get a group of kids all involved and let them all sort of play their own role in this level of make-believe. So yes, it is something that we did, you know, both at home, but also in doing it at school. It was just a wonderful thing to deal with. So let's bring in our guest, and our guest today is Connie Dunn, and she is a nationally recognized author, speaker, and book writing coach. She helps authors and inspiring authors to develop and publish their book. She specializes in working with fiction and nonfiction writers, and in particular, novelists of young adult, middle grade, children's, and picture book authors.
Connie's focus on indie publishing is similar to indie filmmaking, as it's an independent choice. She's been an independent publisher since 1981. She's been writing all of her life, and she's written over 30 books, screenplays, and curricula that she's published. She's taught creative writing, freelance writing, religious education, and a variety of creative workshops.
Now, Connie also has more than 30 years' experience, but hers is as a newspaper journalist, freelance magazine writer, technical writer, and course developer. She has worked with religious education courses, and she's developed those. She has been a storyteller, a children's book author, fiction and nonfiction writer, and teacher for independent book development.
According to Connie, everyone has a book in them, and she's dedicated her life to helping people spread their valuable contributions of wisdom to the world. Connie states, if you don't write it, who will? No one has your particular perspective to share. So without further ado, Connie, thank you for joining us on Answers for the Family.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk.
Well, Connie, it is great having you on here. And I was speaking with someone yesterday while I was at the gym and I'm pedaling away, and somebody came up and said, "So, who's your guest going to be tomorrow?" And as I started sharing what it is that you do, they were so excited in the sense that they said, you know, lots of times on your show, you're focusing a lot on older children. And they said themselves, they have younger children, so they were looking forward to listening and hearing what it is that you do in regards to setting up, books and things for the younger children of today.
Yes, it's a lot of fun to work and develop stories for the little children. They're always fun to write.
In your most recent book, Grandma Honey, I Turned Into a Mermaid. What kind of spurned that?
Well, I'm actually Grandma Honey to my granddaughter Destiny, and so that's where the characters came from. I have to say the book is fictional. It didn't actually happen that way. But I talk with my granddaughter about once a week, and we do a lot of imaginative play while we're on the phone, which isn't always easy.
Now you're saying it's fictional, so you're saying that you didn't actually turn into a mermaid, and I'm guessing that, Matt, you don't actually turn into a mermaid when you play mermaid with your daughter.
No, but I've got incredible pretend fins.
Well, it's always fun, and mermaids are my favorite characters.
So now you also wrote the series that is Destiny Has Two Grandmas. Tell us a little bit about that series and why you started it and how that has progressed.
Well, I started it when she was about 3 years old. And I've been trying to write one a year at the very least. And the reason that I named it Destiny Has Two Grandmas, because she has two grandmas who live in one house. Actually, she has three grandmas. She lives actually with another grandma and her dad in another household in Iowa. And so I just call her every week, and we talk and mainly play online. We go into these, she gets into these very detailed fictional ideas that she's going off on. We just never know where they're going to go.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, and the point of this story was that her dad wouldn't let her go swimming. I mean, you know, dads do things, and he wasn't able to take her swimming. And so that's how we got into this play, is that, we pretended we went swimming.
And so basically it sounds like, although the book is fictional, a lot of the stories were basically lightly based on Destiny's imaginary play examples.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and you know, I was envisioning while you were telling that of your granddaughter saying to her father, "But you know, if you're worried about me going swimming because you can't be there, there's no need to be, because Grandma and I are both mermaids." So,
well, I suppose she could have pulled that, but I live in Massachusetts and she's in Iowa, so I wouldn't actually be with her when she went swimming, unfortunately.
And how often do you get to see Destiny?
Well, I just came back from a trip. We drove out there to see our granddaughter, and it was really nice. We were there for about 4 days. We drove, so it took us a long time to get there. We drove basically from Massachusetts to Iowa, and let me tell you, about all there is between here and there is a lot of vineyards, and then as you get further west, you see only corn and soybeans.
Well, now with these books, and especially Destiny Has Two Grandmas, why did you choose to focus on make-believe and also then the real world for this book?
We had been doing some real elaborate things, and she has been, like, we have pirates that come in, and we have to save ourselves from, you know, getting captured by the pirates, and then sometimes it's other characters that come in, but you know, basically it's like us against, you know, whatever the other thing is. She's big into that. They're all after her. When we were little, we probably played cowboys and Indians, and that's kind of what our play was. But that's not very PC anymore, and so the kids aren't playing that, which is perfectly fine with me.
So as a psychologist, you know, I start to, you know, we do a lot of play therapy, and so a lot of times I'm wearing two hats with my daughter, whether I am therapist Matt or I'm parent, and I really do believe there's a lot of benefits with this play imaginative therapy, both in, you know, in session and in the real world. As I'm talking with you and I'm thinking about play therapy, I think about kind of emotional regulation, language skills, thinking skills. What other kind of things do you think are huge benefits from imaginative therapy and play therapy with kids?
Well, I think they create memories too from their childhood through this imaginative play, and I think I think they develop a lot of vocabulary ability, and of course play, we can use a lot of symbols, and that actually relates directly to language skills, because language is based on symbols. So there's a lot of different levels, I think, that happens when you're doing this imaginative play, because they also have to develop some of their memory skills this way. You know, because what happens a lot of times is we just stop at one point, and we might pick it up the next week when we're playing again. And so she has to really remember where we were, which is kind of fun to watch.
You know, as you were saying that, I was thinking about one of the stories of my son. And on one of his first airplane trips, we were flying to Disney World. So it's California to Florida. And he was a little bit nervous. And so as we were getting on, the flight attendant says, you know, something nice to him, and then says, you know, you seem a little nervous. And he says, yeah, you know, yeah, I am a little bit. And he stepped past her, and he turned left instead of right and started going straight to where the captain is. And she looks and said, well, you know, excuse me. And the captain looks at him and says, no, no, let him come. Now, obviously, this was before 9/11, so that you could do that. And and the captain took him in, sat him down, and started talking to him about flying, and made him feel so great about it. You know, it was wonderful. And so the captain says, so what do you think? Do you think that you want to be a pilot when you grow up? He goes, yeah. He goes, you know, I don't know about being a pilot, but he goes, I'm going to fly when I grow up. And he goes, really? You're going to fly but not be a pilot? He goes, yeah, I'm going to be Spider-Man. So as much as we want to talk to them about the real world, at that age, they're still going to go into those areas of make-believe, which is beautiful.
Yes, it is. It's really nice. It's very innocent. And, you know, I wouldn't give anything for those times for those kids, because that world of innocence doesn't last very long.
No, and I think, you know, my daughter is so fortunate to have a grandpa who will play with her. And I also, you know, love playing these games with her. But my question for you, Connie, is, do you think it's as effective for people to play with them, or on what level is it important for them to kind of develop this play world on their own and encourage that?
I think when they're very little, you have great opportunities to play with them. I mean, it begins when, you know, they're a lot of times just over normal things that happen in their world, like eating. So, you know, they want to make believe food. And I think that's important when you interact with them. But I've seen a lot of parents who sometimes don't want to do that, and they kind of push their kids away. And that's kind of sad to me, because I really think that's a missed opportunity on their part to encourage that development and encourage them to play. So I think, you know, it's it's good both ways, and I think as they grow up a little bit more, you know, early, like, you know, 2, 3, maybe even 18 months on, up to about 3 or 4, you know, playing with them is a way of engaging in all this development that happens in early childhood. But as they get a little older, they do want to go off on their own, and they'll play. But they will play that way, and they, you know, you can give them anything, and they will develop whatever environment they need to develop, and also create all the characters and everything. It's just fun to watch that. I wouldn't buy guns for my kids when they were little, and I found that that didn't stop them from playing with them. They just imagined that they had these other ones that were, you know, like space age blasters or whatever, you know, they wanted to have in their play. They just created it anyway. So you can protect your kids, but they will play and do probably whatever they want anyway. And it's hard to get rid of all of those dangers in the world, because that's just part of our world. And whether you let them watch the news or whether they just kind of hear it third or fourth hand from somewhere else, they hear it, and they do play act what happens in their world.
Yeah, and I'm fascinated, again, as a psychologist, as we look at the themes of their play and as they develop kind of what the focus is. And then I wonder really how much, you know, intervention we should have. You'd mentioned the guns and the playing, and I think it's like you're saying, Alan was telling me earlier about his son, they would use anything they could to turn it into a gun. And as I watched my daughter play different themes, I'm curious on some level is, you know, what's healthy and what's not healthy. But for me, one of the main kind of things that matters to me really is that that the children are thinking more dialectically. And when I say dialectically, the basis is that two opposites are true at the same time. And so basically that the characters that they're playing, you know, can be good and bad and have kind of multitudes of personality. Because I think that one thing that our society does of an injustice is really promotes someone who's all evil or all bad. And it really kind of, again, promotes this black or white, all or nothing thinking. And so for me, when I'm watching my daughter, I do pay attention to some of the themes and kind of just, you know, attribute it to natural development. But I am kind of always kind of keeping an eye on that kind of idea of, you know, really dark themes and all or nothing kind of themes.
Yeah, it's not reality, because almost everybody has some good and almost everybody has some bad. So it is possible for them to, I like that, because they really do play the bad guy sometimes. They kind of want to play that role. It's better for them to play act it than to actually act it out in real life.
So I'm agreeing with you. So it's almost like the themes, what they play in their themes aren't really as important, but it's nice to just follow and kind of understand how they're kind of in their world and what's going on.
Yeah, I don't direct most of it. I just kind of let her kind of go with it, and Grandma Honey just follows along with it.
Now, you brought up a little bit about, you know, the fact that you had started with there was not going to be any play guns in the house, and my home started that way as well. What do you say to the parents, you know, when that happens, as it happened to you and to me, where, you know, they're turning everything into a potential gun because it is what it is that they're seeing on television? What do you tell the parents as to how to deal with that? And also along those lines, you know, at what point, if a parent is dealing with their child, should they be concerned that maybe they're not understanding the difference between reality and make-believe?
Well, that is a problem. It depends on what the age of the kid is about the, you know, the reality and imagination. Because I think when they're very young, there really isn't a lot of difference to them. But as they get older, they develop that distinction. And I would say that it's not all bad that kids play with the guns and that sort of thing. I don't encourage it, but I think it's not horrible, because they are simply acting out things that they see and hear, and it's part of their, but they are making sense of that world while they're doing this imaginative play, because I think that's what happens, is they don't understand it in the real world. So they take it into the imaginative world and try to deal with it there.
Now, is there an age in which, you know, is there been any studies that there's an age in which they start to either come out of that, or that we need to make sure that they understand the differences?
Well, I would say by the time they're 10, they better be able to make the difference between real and imaginative, because I think, you know, at that age, they are then moving into a, you know, being that tweens. And so I think at age 10 and 11, especially at that point, that they should be able to do that. And it all depends on the development of the kid before that, because it's so hard that 7, 8, and 9, a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old can be on the same level emotionally, but, you know, they're not the same age. And then other kids, you know, can be 7 and be, you know, at a 12-year-old's emotional level. So it's hard to know. I just think it depends on the kid and how they are developing. And you said you had an only child, and I think only children develop all these skills a lot earlier. I don't really know why particularly, but I just know that they develop them a little bit quicker than others. Maybe because their major playmates are their parents.
Well, my imaginary friend in chair 3 tends to disagree.
Oh, all right. And what does your imaginary friend think?
Well, he thinks that at my age, it's still okay to have an imaginary friend. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, that's, I mean, that makes sense. You know, around, you know, 9, 10 years old or whatever, that they understand that it's okay to still have that, but just know that it is make believe.
Right. I think if they don't, then they run into some issues at school. You know, where they can't tell the difference. Excuse me, I just dropped my phone. Okay, they can't tell the difference between imagination and the real world, and that can be a problem in school.
I was thinking the same thing, you know, while you were speaking, and I was, what came to mind was the Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and these things, and I was thinking, you know, having an only child, I think it's important that she has a lot of play and make-believe and can live in this world, but I also fear, for what you're saying, that, you know, she goes to school at age 9 or 10, and she's got this imaginary friend, or she's in this imaginary world, or she's talking about the Easter Bunny. I do think she's open to social ridicule and rejection.
Right. Right, and kids are cruel.
Yeah, when Matt just mentioned Christmas, it reminded me that my youngest son, who is very intelligent and very creative, and he told me, he's now 20 years old, and he told me that, you know, at about, I think it was like 12 or 13, when he finally like acknowledged, you know, that he knew some things in regards to Santa Claus. but the funny part was that, you know, at that point he said, you know, I've actually known since about like 8 or 9. He goes, I just didn't want to tell you that I knew, because I knew I'd get more presents if I didn't.
A smart guy.
Exactly.
Yep, they do. They play all their angles. All kids are really smart about those things.
Yeah, you don't,
they can figure it out.
Don't bite the hand that feeds you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of only child, you know, having an only child, do you think that there does come to a point where, because of that, it's more important that we do enter her imaginary play with her, or, you know, have more friends over to the house? Or when it comes to imaginary play, it's really kind of on where she goes with it?
I kind of feel like it's where they go with it, unless they're not having any of that. And then I would, you know, kind of probably help them go into it more. But I love play dates. Play dates are really important for kids. And then, you know, I think it's important for parents to play with them, but it's also not a parent's job to do all of the play. As they get older, they need to be able to do a lot of that on their own. So if they're only seeking mom and dad's attention, that could be potentially bad for them as well, because then they could develop some other issues around, you know, separation and only having mom or dad, and, you know, and excluding everybody else, and their life. So I think it's healthy to have a balance, I guess, is really what I'm saying.
All right. We're talking with Connie Dunn, and we are talking about a lot of things, but one of which is play therapy. Now, if you would like to learn more about Connie, go to her website. It is www.publishwithconnie.com. You can easily go on. You can open up another window if you're sitting at your desk and follow along with us. We're going to take a break. We will be right back. Remember, you're listening to Answers for the Family. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Well, welcome back to Answers for the Family. Our guest today is Connie Dunn. Connie, we have a listener question, and all listeners out there, we're so thankful for you guys calling in and writing in. The question goes, my fellow teachers describe today's generation as being dumbed down. I have to agree, but with the added term of also being numbed down. The students in my seventh grade classes are far more concerned with being entertained than in exploring, learning, and creating anything. Is it your belief that involving them in creative play at an earlier young age might be a game changer for them when they get into their tween and teen years? And if so, what do you base this opinion on?
I would say that it probably is a lot of our electronic age that has come in, and kids do expect to be entertained. How many people read books? I mean, to their kids, and do the kids really imagine the characters, or do we put a video on and show them the video of the book, and so they get used to having the visual along with everything. Everything is animated for them, and I think that does kind of make them think that everything should entertain them rather than them explore things. But I also think they can. Yeah, I know at middle school they should be able to get out of that a lot, and I would challenge the teachers to challenge the kids to do something really fun and creative, and they should take a survey perhaps of what would be interesting to the kids, because there's all kinds of ways of engaging kids in learning something. Books can help them learn things, but they can also learn things one-on-one with their friends. I think earlier, and not quite in middle school, but maybe earlier than middle school, learning how to make slime and all of that good stuff is always fun. So that kind of gets them into the learning mode. So I guess I'm really saying that, I guess I'm talking both ways. It can work either way, and it depends a lot on the kids, but it is kind of sad that our kids are sort of numbed out. I have noticed that. I've gone to groups. I'm going to say I went to a group where the kids were in a battered women's shelter, and they didn't know how to listen to a story. They were expecting it to entertain them a lot more visually than a storyteller can do. And it took them several sessions before they were able to sit and actually listen instead of want to be interactive or talk and watch something.
Yeah, and part of me, I completely agree with you. For me, it seems like it's almost like a focus towards moderation on some level, because I see these read these books and hear about people that are kind of, quote, living off the grid and away from media and away from technology. And then, you know, obviously those children are at risk for not being able to assimilate into culture and feel rejected by their peers because they don't know what's really going on in the, quote, culture or society. So for me, with my daughter, it's really trying to find a balance between, you know, having her read each night. And if there's a program that she wants to watch, you know, it gives her a conversation to have with some kids at school. So I think it's trying to find that balance, I guess.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Everything is kind of a balance with kids. And if they get too much of one or too much of the other, then they it actually affects them. And as you say, you know, the kids come in kind of numbed out because they are sort of in that digital age where everything needs to be, you know, digital. They do fine if the school environment was digital.
Yeah,
and they got to play it as a game.
You know, and I love the fact that you brought up the part about being interactive, because I think that in so many cases, kids are kind of put in front of the TV, and as you said, they're just being entertained, and they're expecting everything to come to them. And I know that, again, when I was the room dad, I became the reader of the Polar Express, and we made it interactive. We always did it right after recess, because beforehand I went and put a bell inside each desk, because that went to the imagination once we were done that they would find this bell, and it would make them think again about what had just happened. But even the reading, getting there, passing out train whistles and passing out other larger bells, so that when the story says that there was a train whistle, we would point to our people with train whistles and they would blow the train whistle. And the same thing when they said, you know, and Santas would ring his bell on his sleigh, it was the same type of thing. And we found that those kids later on remembered those stories. I had kids that, you know, when I would pick up my son from middle school, you know, 5 years later, that would come up and tell me that the story they remembered most was the Polar Express. But, and I believe that it was because not only was it part of their imagination, but it was also interactive. Because they were doing something kinesthetically, it stayed with them so much more.
Right. And we all have different learning styles as well. And so some kids don't need that, but other kids need a lot more of it in order to learn anything or to, you know, to be present and even have that opportunity to take it in. And then there's the kids that, you know, that they have a lot of problems with noise and a lot of other things that I guess they're sensory, they're in sensory overload, so they kind of have to take themselves out of that. But it depends on, you know, what, every kid is so different and everybody learns in such different ways. And if you can find those ways, then you can reach those kids really easy if you know what their learning style is.
One of the avenues that you took, which I really loved, is the use of puppets in the book. What made you, decide to use puppets, and, you know, what started that?
Well, I started a long time ago, actually, when my son was little, and he was an adopted child, and I started with puppets, like, right away. He would talk to the puppets, and he would tell me almost anything as long as we were doing it with puppets. He didn't want to talk to me. He wanted to talk to the puppets. So I found that puppets were a way for kids to express themselves and be able to connect easier. And so I've done a lot of things with puppets. And the reason I have illustrated my stories in puppets is because I can't draw. But I can make a three-dimensional thing, and so I decided I think I should do it that way. And also, on my website, I provide an opportunity for people to download the instructions to make simple finger puppets that goes with the stories. And also, teachers can get some ideas. I have a book of creative ideas where they can help kids do some interactive play. That would be for early childhood, I would think. And so, you know, I just find that that's just such a good a good medium to relate to children and really pull them in. Most kids love puppets.
Now, you know, if you can, I mean, tell us a little bit more about the construction of the puppets, because again, as you were talking about that, I was thinking about all of the teachers that listen that are constantly looking for new ways to entertain or to get their class to take in the information and have it resonate with them. So, you know, tell us a little bit more about the way in which you construct them and how you get them on the pages of your book.
Well, I construct them out of fleece. They are they have a working mouth, and they don't actually talk, obviously, in the pictures, but then I set them up kind of in diorama style and kind of set them in an environment, and I actually have a professional photographer take pictures of them in those environments so that I know what, in each scene, on each page, I've decided what's going to go on them ahead of time.
All right, and again, for those teachers that are listening, if you go to publishwithconnie.com, she has information on how, apparently you have the instructions on how they can do this right on your website?
I do. There's a link that goes to, I think I have them. I'm going to make sure that I have that. If not, I'll have a link that's definitely instructive in where to get that, but it should be on there. Now, and I will make sure afterwards to check and make sure that link is live.
Now, we've talked a lot about the books that are for the younger children. Do you have books for them as they get a little bit older? Is there a series that, you know, that would kind of go to the teens or tweens?
I do not have any books for teens and tweens. I mainly write for young children. I do have adult things, and I do have some stories that are kind of good for any age, and I have collections of those. But I don't actually, I don't have any novels that I've written for the young adult or tween age. I probably will eventually, but not yet.
Well, in the meantime, are there any you can recommend?
Oh, I love, there's a lot of them. I love the Judy Blume series, and I also love Harry Potter, and, oh, goodness, what else? All of a sudden you're asking me, and all of a sudden my brain goes blank. Of course, my youngest daughter was really into a lot of the series, and she was into the American Girl series, which is a great series because it has a lot of multicultural kind of people in it. And then I'm trying to think, there was another one. Oh, the Boxcar Children, those are the ones that she liked. And they're still just as popular today as they were when they came out. And Diary of a Wimpy Kid is great for those tweens, and even especially those that really don't like to read, but enjoy kind of cartoon kind of stuff, because they're graphic novels. And I think the Wimpy Diary of a Wimpy Kid's great for almost all kids.
You know, listening to you and hearing about all these different, very simple, actually, interventions and ways that we can enhance learning for my daughter Eden and Destiny, your granddaughter, and the rest of the children in this world, does it really come down to just parents, I hate to use the word lazy, but not being lazy and being creative on their own to kind of, it's almost like the more creative the parent is, the more creative the child is almost.
I think so, because they need a lot of different experiences. And if the more that you expose your kid to, then the more they're going to realize the capabilities that they might have in themselves.
You know, I remember,
and especially if they're,
I'm concur with that. I remember as a child, my grandparents were very much into the theater and classical music, and so I was, you know, apprehensive at 5 or 6 years old to go to the theater. And now, later in life, I appreciate the richness of the shows I saw and the music that I heard and the experiences that I got. So I think that as parents, it's almost like we've got to push ourselves over the early resistance almost from ourselves and from the children to get them, you know, exposed to more and more stuff.
That's true. We do. We just really have to. We really have to do the work as parents. our job is to raise up our children as best as we can. And sometimes that's a challenge because the kids are not, you know, they're not exactly like we were when we were a kid. So you really have to think out of the box sometimes. And of course, we didn't have all this electronic stuff when we were young. I mean, when I was little, I mean, I played outside all the time, and in fact, it was like a whole neighborhood. There must have been, I remember it as we had like 100 million kids out there, but it really wasn't, probably maybe 5 or 6 kids. But we would put on plays during the summer. We must have had a play a day, and we'd bake cookies and make Kool-Aid, and then we'd sell it for 2 cents to each of the kids that came to the play. Of course, most of the kids were in the play, so we would buy them anyway. But 2 cents, I'm sure, did not cover the cost of our mother's work.
Yeah. Now, it has appeared, at least, that reading for kids was on the decline for many years. Do you feel that there's been any sort of comeback with that, with electronic items like the Kindle and things like that, to where kids can get back to where they can read because it's on that piece of equipment that is now with them all the time?
I think so. I think that helps because they like to be on these electronic things. And that's another way for them to read. And the advantage of being on a Kindle or one of those kind of, you know, tablets or readers is that you can set the size of type to what you like, and that's good. It actually works for people on both ends. It works for little children that need, you know, bigger because they just aren't, you know, they don't read well. So the bigger the letters, the better it is. And then, of course, as they get older, like I have some senior people who love the Kindle because they can set the type bigger.
And as you're speaking, we've got another listener question, so I'm going to read it to you. I take care of my 2 grandchildren, ages 3 and 5. You could probably relate to that. A couple days a week, I ordered your book and would like a little more direction on how best to use it. And do you have other suggestions for other materials that will engage my little ones in the, quote, creative play that you speak about? And this is from Shirley in L.A.
Well, Shirley in L.A., clay is one of the better things I can ever think of to use with kids. Either Play-Doh, I like Play-Doh better than the modeling clay because it's more pliable, and I think kids like it. And you can make it, and they can actually help you make it. I don't know whether I have the recipe online, but I'll see about that and try to find the link to that and put that on my page as well. And I think, you know, playing with Play-Doh is always creative. You can have them make other sea creatures from the ocean, since it involves mermaids. They could be mermaids or mermen, for that matter, or they could be some other sea creature. Lots of unique ideas. And also, it doesn't really matter whether they're accurate or not. As long as they think they're that character, they are. I've been working with kids this summer through a summer food program in one of the cities around me, where all the kids that are in that town can come eat for free. So, you know, the city that I'm working in has like 40% of the kids are on the free school lunch, so they've decided to provide the lunches. And I don't serve the lunches, I do some of the activities. So we've been making paper bag puppets all summer. And they're all different. So we have themes, and the kids have been making all kinds of puppets. And so just finding all those, using... There's a lot of things online that you can search for that help get into that creativity and things that kids can do. Kids love crafts. They love to do things.
And obviously they should read Grandma Honey, I Turn Into a Mermaid, and Destiny Has 2 Grandmas. Aside from those books, what else do you plan to publish this year?
Well, I have actually published, or I am in the process of publishing, a whole set of personal goddess journals, and those are for adults. And again, the creativity is there, but also, you know, learning about the goddesses and self-help and working with different things like for example, my first one is about my personal journey with Oya. And Oya is a goddess from West Africa, and they would be dealing with personal power. So they can do that, but also throughout the journal is opportunities to color, because I always think meditation and coloring, even for adults, is a really good thing. We don't unplug ourselves as often as we need to either. So it's always good to have something where you're not on the computer and not in front of the television and doing other things. So I have a series of those that I've been publishing, and I have another book in my Destiny series that will be about bullying. That's my next book coming up, so I'm still working on illustrations for that. And then I also have another book couple of books that are off on the side, but they're both children's. More, one of them is more of a picture book, and the other one probably a little more writing than the other. It's more of a legend, and so I'll be publishing it. Hopefully, I don't know whether I'll get to it this year, but it'll certainly be early next year.
Well, Connie, we want to thank you so much, and we want to acknowledge you for and thank you for keeping creativity and keeping make-believe out there for our children. So many parents are working two jobs, and doing everything they can to make ends meet. And so to have access to books like yours and things that can keep their child being as creative as possible, again, we thank you and we acknowledge you for that.
Thank you. I also read just the other day that if people engage in crafts, it cuts down their stress to about 75%.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start tomorrow.
Most of the time.
Well, good. I'm going to start crafts tomorrow.
Okay.
So again, thank you very much. We appreciate it so much, you coming on. And again, for everybody else out there, if you will tune in next week, our guest will be Kara Bradley, and she will share her secrets to shifting beyond our busy minds and into the present moment. This and more are great techniques that are found in her new book, On the Verge, Wake Up, Show Up, and Shine.
And if you missed or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery.
And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and check out some of our latest posts. And if you like them, please like us and spread the word. It's those of you out there spreading the word. Feel free to provide feedback if there are things that you'd like to hear more of on the show. We do this for you. We're trying to put out positive education. We're trying to put out things that are going to inspire and entertain all of us. So again, thank you for listening to us, and be with us again next week for Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.